And we'll go on to the next case, United States versus Kennedy, number 081267, Mr. Livingston.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Edward Livingston. I represent the appellant, Marcus Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy was unjustly denied his right to a fair trial, as the jury was not provided with the proper tools to make an objective and legally sound determination. First, not only did the district court deny all opportunity for a theory of defense instruction, but the jury was misinstructed as to the law of possession. Second, the government put forward a morass of bloody, brutal, and outrageously prejudicial evidence, which improperly invited the jury to convict Mr. Kennedy on the basis of bad acts that went far beyond the charged offense and prevented the jury from objectively assessing the evidence against possession.
Originally, you wanted this evidence to come in, though, didn't you?
No, Your Honor. In regard to the waiver issue, I think the first thing to look at with this issue is actually to look at the claim that the government is making. What the government is asking you to believe is that the defendant wanted to, in defense of a possession charge, the defendant wanted to affirmatively bring in evidence that might implicate him in a home invasion and a shooting. That doesn't make sense, and further, that implication isn't supported by the record. I think all you have to do is look back at the government's own words. The motion you're referring to is government's motion limiting number 4. It's docket entry number 46. And in that motion, the government says that they threaten Mr. Kennedy. They say that if he deigns to put on a defense against possession, that they are going to bring in this evidence. That motion further admits that that evidence is irrelevant and that it runs the risk of misleading and confusing the jury. As soon as Mr. Kennedy made it clear that he was going to exercise his constitutional right to put forward a defense, the government carried through on its threat. The letter of October 31st says that in light of the fact that Kennedy is going to challenge Officer Pacillo's testimony, the government will be introducing evidence regarding the events leading up to the shooting. So I don't think there is strategic waiver in this case, and I think the record's very clear on that.
Well, your defense, I guess, was the additional participant theory, right?
Mr. Kennedy, there was
third man or whatever.
Yeah, the third man theory was Mr. Kennedy's defense. I mean, there was also that was basically the basis of his theory that he did not possess the vehicle, that the firearm had been possessed by a third man, who may or may not have been at the vehicle prior to Officer Pacillo rising on the scene. Turning back to the theory of defense instruction issue. The law is clear that the defendant is entitled to have the jury instructed on any theory of defense that is supported by the law and has some support some foundation in the evidence. Mr. Kennedy met this standard. Compounding the injustice, the district court's improper denial of Mr. Kennedy's theory of defense and any opportunity to provide an acceptable alternative effectively denied Kennedy his defense in total. Kennedy's claim to innocence rested on challenging Officer Pacillo's story that he had found the firearm in Kennedy's waistband. Without the theory of defense instruction, however, such a challenge is rendered meaningless, as the firearm's presence in the vehicle was not contested, and the instructions that were presented to the jury did not mention or explain the core concept of proximity. I think you need to think about the evidence that came in, Your Honors. The jury was presented with evidence that the firearm may not have been in Kennedy's waistband. They were presented with evidence that a third man may have been involved or a third man was involved in the morning's events. That evidence doesn't make, if the jury doesn't understand, however, that finding a firearm in a vehicle is not the same as finding a firearm in someone's waistband, that evidence doesn't make any sense as a defense against possession. Without the theory of defense instruction, the jury was allowed to believe that Kennedy's mere proximity to the firearm in the vehicle was sufficient to convict for possession. Even if there was any possibility that the jury might have understood the government's burden under the law, It was lost when the government made its statement to the, its inaccurate statement of the law to the jury. In its closing, the government told the jury, and I quote, that Pacillo had absolutely no reason to lie because of the way the law of possession worked. The government then correctly quotes the jury's instructions regarding possession, but almost immediately and incorrectly states that finding something within a car is possession just the same as is finding it within someone's waistband. You have the only way to, for the jury to reconcile the instructions they were given with the government statement is for them to believe that proximity establishes knowledge, which is incorrect under the law. This issue alone is reason enough to remand. On top of this, we have the interjection by the government of bloody and brutal bad act evidence that tainted this trial from the very start. The presence of this issue on appeal fundamentally arises from the fact that prior to trial, the government said it was going to bring in evidence which would corroborate Officer Pacillo's story and provide an independent basis on which to convict Kennedy for possession. It did neither. Officer Doherty's testimony is actually a perfect example of what went wrong with this trial. Doherty testified to arrest of Duante Vance, which occurred after the home invasion. Her testimony was wholly concerned with Vance, who she very graphically described as being shot in the face and covered in blood from head to toe. Officer Doherty didn't see who shot Vance or how he got shot. She didn't see who drove away in the SUV. She only arrived at the scene of the home invasion after the fact, so she wasn't able to speak to see the men go in or come out, and she was never present at the accident scene. Doherty's testimony so traded the trial that it alone warrants a new trial.
Was the anticipation, I guess, of the government, maybe they'll answer this, is finding him in the car with the gun either in the belt or next to him or something, was that... Was the only way out of that was to plead?
I think that's the implication of the motion, Your Honor. I mean, what they said is that if Doherty puts on a defense claiming that he did not possess the firearm or that he had no knowledge of the firearm, that they're going to bring in this bad act evidence.
But now, either, I guess what they're saying, then he would either, okay, look, they got me with the gun in the belt, I'll plead to that. I don't know whether that would have improved his situation any. And they say, well, if he's going to deny his gun and everything else, then they're going to go back and show earlier possession and all this rigmarole that went in.
I think that that is what they said it was going to show. But I think, you know, in our briefs we show that the evidence they brought in doesn't show that. It doesn't show those things. And the implication of the motion is basically, I mean, Kennedy really only had, if he was going to mount a defense, it had to challenge the possession prong. And, you know, that motion, really, the implication of that motion is, if you make any defense at all, we're going to bring in this bad act evidence. I would just note that in addition to our 404B arguments, Rule 403 provides an independent basis on which this evidence should be excluded, and the government has provided no response to that in their briefs. I see I'm running into my rebuttal time, but I'd like to briefly talk about the sentencing issue. The district court erred in applying the attempted murder cross-reference based solely on conflicting and unreliable hearsay that was not supported by other evidence. This error is not harmless. The district court made no finding of an alternative felony. And under Jackson, any such finding would simply be further error, Your Honors, and provide an independent basis for remand, as the record is clear that no notice was provided to the defense that any alternative felony would be at issue at the sentencing hearing. Thank you, Your Honor.
So he didn't get the guideline sentence. He got the statutory maximum, right?
Yes, and our brief argues that that was a misapplication of the guidelines because the finding of attempted murder rested solely on Vance's testimony, which was unreliable hearsay, and it wasn't supported by other evidence in the record. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Elizabeth Altman, and I represent the United States in this case. Everything about this case and this trial was done properly, from the admission of evidence, from the jury instructions, and from the sentencing. Looking first at the admission of evidence, because that's where the court seemed to have a couple questions, the government originally charged this case, and there was a complaint in this case, so you can see what the government's original theory is. And the government's original theory was Officer Pacello came across a car. In that car, he found Marcus Kennedy, and in Marcus Kennedy's waistband, he found a gun. That was always the government's theory. That was always what the government intended to prove. As we started getting ready for trial and through discussions with defense counsel, it became clear that he was going to try to bring up this third-person defense. And in order to do that, he needed the evidence of Dante Vance being shot. He needed that because Dante Vance says, "They shot me." And he needed that because in Dante Vance's pocket was a piece of paper. And on that piece of paper were the names of Marcus MC and the name Rob with some phone numbers. So to create this third person and put a third person at the scene, he needed that evidence in. And you can tell because when the government filed its motion seeking to exclude the evidence, that happened on 10/25. On 10/28, the defendant filed a motion indicating, to the extent that the government is requesting that the defendant be precluded from presenting evidence of a prior shooting or home invasion moments before the rollover accident, the defendant objects. He's the one who wanted that evidence in. He needed it for his defense. There were some other items in the car, of fingerprints and Vance's blood, that he could have used to some extent without those items, but those were the items he needed to put a third person at the scene that night. And to get those items in, he needed the shooting in. And that was his plan. That's why he did that. It's reiterated throughout the record. He opposed our motion seeking to exclude the evidence. At the final hearing, he says that he was planning on using the evidence of a series of events before the accident to suggest that the officer did not find the gun in the defendant's waistband. And then on the morning of trial, he says that it was his theory that the gun was used to shoot someone in a car and left in a car. He has to bring in the evidence of the shooting. Once it was determined that it was coming in, of course the government brings it in first. It's going to tell its story. But the only reason that came in is due to his affirmative actions, and so it was properly admitted. With regard to the jury instruction, the defendant says in his brief several times, and he says here today, that a defendant is entitled to have a jury consider any theory of defense which is supported by the law and which has some foundation in evidence. The next section of that thought, and it's quoted in United States versus Briscoe, is that, however, the defendant is not entitled to have his or her particular instruction presented to the jury. Rather, the defendant is only entitled to have his or her theory of defense presented to the jury. And in this case, it was. The requested instruction is simply a constructive possession argument or a knowledge element. The instruction, the instruction was, you've heard evidence that Dante Vance was shot shortly before Mr. Kennedy was found in an overturned vehicle near the location of the shooting. If you believe that someone other than Mr. Kennedy shot Mr. Vance, left the gun in the vehicle, and Mr. Kennedy drove the vehicle away from the scene of the shooting without knowledge that the gun was in the car or without an intent to exercise control over the gun, you may not find the defendant guilty of count one of the indictment. He's essentially defining constructive possession and knowingly, and the jury was instructed on that. What he's looking for with this instruction was essentially the court's stamp of approval on his argument, and he's not entitled to that. The instruction was covered in the jury's charge, and he argued his theory to the jury. So that denial of that instruction was entirely proper and appropriate. Now, with regard to my statement in the initial closing, that's where I said something about having a gun in the car is the same as having it in someone's waistband. That was immediately following a discussion of constructive possession, and it was a sentence within a full closing argument. Nothing else was drawn attention to that, and it was clear from the government's evidence, from my argument both in closing and in rebuttal, that that wasn't what I was saying was happening. I was very clear that the government's theory was that The gun was in his waistband, and that's why he should be found guilty. After I made the statement, it was not objected to. Because it was in my initial closing as opposed to my rebuttal, he could have pointed it out in his closing and shown that it was an incomplete statement of the law. He could have renewed his request for a jury instruction. He could have asked for a curative instruction. None of that happened. It was such a minor statement. I don't want to say innocuous because it wasn't exactly a correct statement, but it was such a minor part of this case and of the defendant's closing, and it's clear that that was never, ever the government's theory. Because the jury was properly instructed and he was able to make all the arguments he wanted, that was handled correctly. With regard to sentencing, Dante Vance, while making somewhat inconsistent statements as to how the shooting happened, he never wavered as to who shot him, ever. He first said they, not naming anybody. He next said someone who he knew as Country. He next said that Country's name was Marcus, and he then said that Marcus was really Marcus Kennedy. There was no inconsistent statements whatsoever as to who shot him that night. That evidence was corroborated, perhaps not by a specific ID, but Brent Krause said that someone wearing the defendant's jacket, who had hair exactly like the defendant, who got into a car carrying a gun, the same car that was later found with the defendant in it, with a gun in his waistband, was at the scene chasing a man throughout his house. If that's strongly corroborative of Mr. Kennedy shooting Mr. Vance. When Mr. Kennedy learned that the police were called, he fled the scene. When he was pushing Mr. Krause through the house, he was saying that Vance had robbed him and they had to find him and stop him. If that were the case, he would have waited for the police to come. He could have waited for the police to come. He didn't stick around to say it was an accident. He didn't stick around to say someone else did the shooting. He didn't stick around to say that Vance had been trying to rob him and it was self-defense. As the district court noted, the PSR made a very, very strong case that that gun was used by Kennedy in an attempted murder. That can't be clear error. It just simply can't be.
When he was pushing, as you say, Krause through the house, he didn't tell him who he was looking for, did he?
He said that man. The way that it happened is Vance breaks into the house. Krause meets up with him first, and then he meets up with Kennedy, and Kennedy starts pushing him through the house saying, "We have to find that man. That man tried to rob me." Based on everything in the record, as I indicated before, everything in this case was done properly, and I would respectfully request this court affirm both the conviction and the sentence.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll be brief because there's a lot to cover. First point I want to make in regard to the 404B issue and the jacket is that it's very clear. I think we have to be very clear as to what Krause actually testified to. He didn't identify Kennedy in the home. He never identified the firearm that was at trial as the small handgun used during the home invasion. Also, the jacket, there's lots of reasons on the record to not see the jacket as corroborative. Beyond the fact that Krause had conflicting descriptions of the jacket and the fact that it was not put in Becker's original evidence report, if you look carefully at Officer Pacillo's testimony, you'll notice that he never identifies Kennedy as wearing the jacket at the time when he pulled him out of the vehicle. In fact, when he was asked directly about that on cross, he said he could not identify that. Now, in regard to also I would just say that Kennedy never affirmatively advocated for evidence outside the four corners of the vehicle and the accident scene. The government has provided no citations that would let you to prove that. And there was evidence at the accident scene. There was fingerprints and there was blood evidence that made his case that the possession was not made. Also, in regard to the motion, would have been improper. I'm sorry. May I finish my thought?
Yeah.
The motion, it would have been improper for him to for him to accede to that motion at that time because that was prior to the evidence reports coming in, and he could not know that there wasn't exculpatory evidence that would have been available. Thank you, Your Honors.
Case will be taken under advisement.